Hello and welcome to the 6++ Show, a podcast for your wargaming and 40k needs. Hobby talk, tactics, tournament reports, lore and much more. We have it all. Please welcome your host for the evening, Tom.
Welcome, ladies, gentlemen and denizens of the warp. My name is Chris, not Tom, as the intro lady said, and we are here to talk 40k on the 6++ Show. Fortunately, Tom and Jamie can't join us today, so we thought, do we cancel? And then we thought, well, you know what? It's been a while. We know you lovely lot out there want some big, sexy, muscly men to talk about 40k. So with that in mind, Lee, do you know anyone?
No, I don't.
You could do that. No. Okay, right. Well, how are
I'm
you doing?
I'm doing all right. Anyway? I'm doing okay. Yeah, no, it does feel like it's been a while since we've done one of these. We were just doing State of Play, obviously, a little while ago for the new Chaos Space Marines book. But I guess it's been fairly quiet for us otherwise, isn't it? So it's nice to sort of get back to it, even if it's just the two of us.
Yeah, just, you know, the best of bros, just hanging
exactly.
out. You been up to any Warhammer?
No, I've hardly been playing at all.
Nothing at all.
I haven't been hobbying either, so that's a short episode.
Any hobbying, though?
To answer seriously, I guess yes. I have been doing a lot more of my Chaos Space Marines. So I bought and built and painted 10 Chosen, which I really enjoy. That's a really great kit. A lot of customization in that and just a lot of character. It's funny because they're not bigger than Chaos Space Marines, but they have so much more like presence, which is quite cool.
Yeah.
Other than that, in anticipation of the Demons book coming, I had a load of Demonettes I'd never got to doing. So I've been doing batches of 10 Demonettes, which turns out is all you need these days. Spoilers. So I'm glad I wasn't one of those people that got 90. I actually only owned 30. So
job done. So battalion sorted.
Yeah, exactly.
And are you contrasting them, or have you gone for a detailed?
So it's funny. I've got two here actually. So I've done. This is one. In fact, let me get them both.
This is great. This is great for TV, isn't it?
Oh, that's here we go. Quite the view for YouTube. Yeah.
So here we go. So I've got one that I did traditional method. Don't know how well that comes across on the camera. Probably not very well at all.
It's not the best yet. Okay, yeah.
And I did one in contrast, exactly the same model, just to test it. And I thought it looked fine. So that's what I've been doing, actually. So it's one of the new contrast paints, the dreadful visage. I don't know how you say that. But I've been using that, and that's been working great, actually, because there was no like tone for it before. So I did buy some of the, what's this one called? Magos Purple. And I thought that might be a good match for the Demonette skin, but it wasn't at all. And then when the new batch came out, I got that one. Mm. So the Dreadful Visage, and that's been great. So yeah, don't see any reason why not to contrast them. I mean, demons actually just really lend themselves to that. So,
they're perfect. Yeah. Well, I always remember when we went to Warhammer Fest, was it? And they just introduced the contrast paints, and we saw a bloodlet that had been done. Perfectly demonstrated by Lee there. And we were just like, this works beautifully.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. Because I remember going up to the guy like, this up corn army looks great. How did you do it? And he's like, the red is one colour. So that's the Flesh Terror's red. And yeah, I mean, I used it for all my blood layers. It looks fantastic. And yeah, I see no reason not to.
I think the more and more I paint, the more and more I want to dip into the contrast because you can just get the effect for just such a reduced amount of time.
I think what I'm really enjoying with it at the moment is how quickly you can get things together. And it's funny because I do have time to paint things and I do like to sort of make them look nice, but I think there is a balance in terms of time that you can afford to spend doing stuff like this. And honestly, when I look at those blood letters and those demonettes, I'm like, they're absolutely fine. Like, as I look at my traditionally painted stuff, it's not that much better. It really isn't. As I was looking at my paint rack, I would say of the last sort of 10 paints I bought, I reckon 8 have been contrast paints. I'm a big advocate now.
Yeah, me too. So there you are. That's tip number one for those new to the podcast.
Have you been hobbying, Chris?
I have been dabbling.
Just a bit dabbling.
Yeah, so obviously I've been on the Harlequin train been on that train for quite a while, and I'm getting to the point now where I'm kind of bored of painting them. I've got so many painted because I keep changing my list slightly, so I keep having to paint slightly.
Like two more troops and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. But now that's kind of done. I'm done with that. So I've been able to turn my attention to some AOS. I've got some Sylvaneth that I'm currently painting up, because one day we will have that big launch.
I have also been painting some AOS, I guess. Firstly, the Sinesh works for both, which is great, because that's like two for one.
Yep.
And I've been painting, you remember a while ago, we bought those Battle Forces. And I got the Sinesh one, so I've been doing the mortal side, the easy ones, I guess, the ones that are in fully gold armor. Basically put them down with their retributive spray. Got some nice coverage with that. Took a few goes because the spray's a bit rubbish. And then I've been using Reikland gloss over it to really give that sort of pompousness, I guess you'd expect from Sinesh. They would have it highly buffed, wouldn't they? They wouldn't have it dirty or anything like that. So
that's quite cool.
One day we'll get to show those off. And I painted the terrain piece as well, which I was really happy with.
Oh yeah, that's huge, wasn't it?
Big boy.
A big hefty boy. Yeah, we're saving like all of the pictures and the video files and stuff we've created for one day when we've got enough to do like a little
soft launch.
A little launch type thing. Yeah. So that'll be good. Right. Well, today's episode is tournament reports. So if you have an interest in Creations of Bile, Chaos Space Marines in general, Harlequins, how to beat either of those two armies, or you just like listening to two guys chat about whilst you're driving or painting or something, then this is the place. So, Lee, I want you to cast your mind back to 2 weeks ago.
It's a long time.
Okay. I know, it's hard. You've got baby brain. Lee's an expectant father. Very exciting.
Thank you.
And you went somewhere.
Went to High Wycombe. So I went to Tabletop Republic, where I've never been before, to their event, the Eternal Wrath, it was called.
Yes. So Tom and I have been there before. What did you make of the venue?
It was nice. It was it's in a store. But I think they had 10 tables set up, and there's a sort of a hobby area, a shop right in the middle of a town. So you could get like lunch options. There's Greg's right outside, which is pretty helpful.
Yeah.
And most importantly, there's a giant Monastery car park right nearby. So
As we all know, as long-term listeners of this the podcast will know, it's all about that car park.
Ever since going to Brighton and being 40 minutes late to my first game so I couldn't park, I'm burned.
Yeah, exactly. And second most important thing was, what was the toilet situation?
Not as good. So what they have is, they do have toilets on site, but they have one. So when there's sort of 20 players and also customers or whatever else in there, so if you're looking at a one in one out situation all the time, I can speak for myself when I say that Warhammer players can be quite smelly. You don't want to go in there right after, so it's just more better. I think they did have a second toilet, but obviously it was men's and women's. On the day, all the players were men, it was very much rotating door, I guess.
Okay, right.
But it was clean. It was fine. It was fine. It just wasn't enough of them.
Wasn't there like loads of deodorant in there?
Yeah, so they actually have a little thing which is like, I didn't actually ever see the hygiene policy, but it sort of said like, these are free for you to use adhere to the hygiene policy of the store, which is nice. It's a nice gesture. I don't think that any amount of sort of Sure for Men is going to cover up the nerd stink completely. But it's a nice gesture, isn't it? And I certainly appreciate it. And I get very smelly when I play one. I don't know why. I think it's stress. I'm definitely grateful for that.
Yeah. And I think those like little touches go a long way in events, because those are things like the amenities and how comfortable you are and all those sorts of things. They play on your mind for when you want to go back to events. It's not just the games.
It filters the subconscious, doesn't it? Like, it's all the small elements that sort of make up your overall feeling or towards an event.
Yeah, definitely. So you took what?
I took Creations of Bile. So I was really excited by the new Chaos Space Marines book. I had played a few games. If regular listeners will remember that I took Black Legion to the Wars End Faustus event hosted a few weeks ago. And I really enjoyed playing with that. But then I thought, let's make something better. Let's make the best thing I can. And after sort of a couple of editions, I came up with the Creations of Bile list Creations of Bile had been doing well already. I hadn't sort of spotted them that no one else had seen. It was absolutely established by then. So I took that. My list for the event was it wasn't typically, it was fairly typical. I took all the things you'd expect to see. So I guess just to run through that from memory. Master of Possession, that was for the buffs because I had a lot of Demonkin in the list. Lord Discordant, which, you know, in the new book, probably even better than they used to be. I had a Demon Prince with the the Sword of Golax, which is the demon weapon that allows you to ignore wound bracketing. I was fully expecting to see Necrons, fully expecting to see Abaddon. So I was like, okay, well, I need something to deal with that. I took five Legionnaires, so Chaos Space Marines, with a book so they could do powers, which is quite nice. I had a little extra Psyker. Two lots of 10 Cultists, 10 Chosen with three Melter Guns, five Possessed, 10 Possessed with the Black Rune of Damnation, a Chaos Spawn, a Rhino, and a Master of Executions. All of my characters basically came with upgrades as much as I could possibly give them. I played Heroed Hammer to the absolute extreme. That's what I was running. Everything that I could take a mark was basically running Sinesh, except for the Demon Prince, which obviously had to be Nurgle.
Okay, so there's no Abaddon there.
There's no Abaddon there. And I really did toil over this. I wasn't sure because Abaddon himself presents such a mini game. Like some games, he'll just almost win you the game by virtue of the opponent not having three phases to deal with him. But I was going for Bile, so the Legion trait for Bile is plus one strength, plus one movement, which are both great, don't get me wrong, but also everything in the army that's created to Bile can fight on death.
Just a nice extra third thing.
Those two things on their own before that are probably already good enough, because so many things are strength in Bile. From strength 4 to 5, which is great, or 5 to 6, which is also great. I wanted as many things to be able to have that fight on death as I possibly could. Abaddon doesn't get it. And it's also 300 points of other things that could get it. Just for reference, that's 10 possessed, more than 10 possessed.
Which are quite good.
I can't even tell you how terrifying 10 possessed fighting on death is. I mean, I can tell you, and I will in a minute. But
excellent. So you built the list. Did you have any practice games going?
One practice game against. Look at the smug face against your Harlequins, and I got absolutely battered in that game. It was probably, I can't remember now, probably close to 140, something like that.
Yeah, we called it. We just called it. After it was.
I had nothing left. And whilst that was an absolute battering, it taught me one thing, which is Creations of Bile can play one way, and that's they run through you and they table you or they lose. So Chaos Space Marines do not have good secondary objectives. You can't run around and sort of steal objectives from people. You're not that quick. You don't have any obsec. You know, all your units are too expensive to do actions with. So basically what I learned was, can the opponent deal with me quickly enough? Is the question that the list asks. And if it can't, then you're in a very good chance to win the game.
And I think it's so important. It's a serious point because it's so important to learn what the win conditions are for your army, and you only get to know that by playing it. Like, we had our game and Lee was like just naturally cautious.
Which I normally am.
Yeah, exactly. It's your natural style. You play those sorts of armies. And so you're just, you know, you were kind of like hovering around, and it meant that, you know, we spoke about it, like if you just dump everything in the middle and run at the opponent, then actually it's putting a timer on them to say,
yeah, you've got one chance to get rid of all my three wound bodies.
Yeah, exactly that. So cool. So you're not going in with the best.
No, I'm feeling terrible going in.
Yeah, exactly. So what was your first
game? So my first game was against a lovely guy called Leo, and he was running Necrons. So he was running Silent King. He was running a load of shooty wraiths, the old style ones. I don't know what they're called anymore. Not wraiths, the old style destroyers. He was running some wraiths. It was kind of a bit of everything. It was the classic Eternal Conquerors expansionist combo.
It was a good list.
It was a good list. And we looked at it before, and I think you and I were a bit like, this is going to be uphill.
It was an optimized Necronist, so it was going
to
be.
And that's all he plays, actually. So that was his army. That's what he plays. And he's a local to that store, so he knows that crowd quite well. So he was coming in with a good idea of what he was going to be doing. That game, we were playing I can't remember. I haven't got the mission down here now. Let me have a quick look. It was Data Scry, which again, Necrons right. quite like. They've got all that pre-game moves. They can come and steal the board. So I'm looking at that thinking, this is going to be tough. I know how well Necrons score. And I was like, okay, well, it was very clear to me at this point. And I was grateful to have this game first because I was like, if I do nothing, I will lose this game. If I stand back, I will lose the game. If I go tentatively, I will lose the game. Just because passively Necron Secretary is so good, I couldn't do that. So I'm like, well, all I can do really differently is run screaming at him and try and pace it so that if I can get all of my units that... Basically, if I can get my fighter units to fight more than he can get to use, I will get to use mine no matter what if I can get them into things that fight. So if I can kill the things that shoot them and then he will charge me with the other things that need to charge me to kill me, then I will still get to react and I still get to kill them. So that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, I mean, I've spoken a lot to people about the Necrons game and it's very much... they're going to score and they're going to win unless you can pretty much table them by turn three, four, so they don't have the power to score the secondaries. And that's what we're speaking about and I speak about with everyone. Whenever they're like, oh, what do you do against Necrons? Like, just run at them and hopefully...
Because they're still not that killy. They score really well, but they're not very killy, even with everything being core. They don't seem to actually kill that much stuff. And with Armour Contempt, they don't like that either. And I think that's what surprised me actually around my list was how resilient it proved to be a lot of the time.
Yeah, no, it definitely comes across that way. So did you smash down a flank? Did you smash down the middle? Did you go across all four objectives?
I went sort of directly through the middle.
Okay, with no terrain.
Oh, yeah, I did the picture for this one. The terrain on this was really tough. So basically it was Data Scry, so you're going through the diagonals to each other.
Yep.
And then right down the middle, the two channels, absolutely nothing. So I felt like I was playing run through the channels directly at the Silent King destroyers. It was on a knife edge because those destroyers picked up a lot of possessed.
Yeah.
It just so happened that I managed to tag a couple of things with them and they were like one of them survived enough to sort of slow them down a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then I was able to sort of bring the rest of it up to bear behind that. So yeah, directly through the middle, really. I wasn't ever going to outscore him if I went wide. It's not necessarily a synergy army. Like, you don't need to all be around in auras of each other. But it does, it can get picked off piecemeal. You've only got one or two things that you can play that way with. So I was quite often sending a spawn or warp talons or whatever in one direction and ignoring them and just sort of saying, you can deal with these or not. They're very quick, so they can go and do an action or steal an objective or whatever else. But generally, it was kind of wave after wave of giant, enormous thing to kill.
So did you find over the course of the weekend you kept taking the same secondaries?
Yeah, I was really, really reliant on no prisoners because I really wanted to double down on what the army was good at, and I figured out very quickly that it was good at killing stuff. No prisoners was... almost in all I've taken it in almost every game. There was only a couple that I didn't take that in. And the other one was the bio-specific one, which is specimens for the spider. So this one, for those who don't know, because it's a bit more niche, you get 2 points if you kill an enemy unit in melee, and a further 3 points if you kill a character or a monster in melee. And then at the end of the game, so maximum 5 per turn, end of the game, if you kill a Sanctic Astartes, Adeptus Astartes, or a Heretic Astartes, you get 1 extra point. I didn't remember that until even after the second event. So I remembered it right at the end. I was like, because I was looking at the final standards, like, could I have got more points? That one was incredible because it just couples really well with what you want to do. And then for the last one was quite hard. I was struggling. Wherever I could, I would take banners and just try and sit on two. And then at the end, hopefully, basically tell people to put it and chuck a couple up for some points and try and get sort of 10. Every now and then I would take Nephilim data just because I had cultists and marines that were kind of getting ignored.
Solid.
It's an 8. I was planning for 8, but I had nothing else. I was going for 8, yeah.
What was the final score in your first game?
I actually don't have the score here, which is kind of sad. I know that I scored 86, but I think I stopped writing in my opponent's score, which is very lazy of me.
Okay, so solid 86. Yeah. So you've beaten Necrons. You've beaten a tough Necron list. What's your prize for
by the way, he also had a Nightbringer, so I was very glad to have Golax in the list.
Ah, did you just go through him straight
away? I didn't actually, but it was enough to make him play around me. Like, he didn't want to come to me. I was like, fine, because I don't really care. Yeah. So second game, what a treat. Necrons again.
Oh, you lucky boy.
Lucky boy. So this was a very different list. This was a classic 3-10. And then, to be honest, not much else. You don't get much else.
No, that's like half his points.
Again, I'm looking at Golax thinking, well, you're my main man here. Like, if he comes for me, that's what's going to have to happen.
Because he one-shots a Catan.
He one-shots a Catan, yeah. But what was really interesting in this game is that he was very, very cagey. Actually, my opponent was super cagey in this one and knew about that. So he basically stood back and just tried to get as many mortal wounds through me as he could whilst using his scarabs to tie up things that were irrelevant, which he did very well, actually. It ended up being a 3-point game. And I just about squeaked it through. And I had the moment in the game when it was sort of, I was definitely going to lose. And I said to myself, I think I said out loud, this turn I'm going to kill 2 Satans and all the scarabs. And he said to me, you can't kill 2 Satans. I'm like, let's do it then. And I had the Chosen Melter Blast something. I had the Master of Possession Smite one. I had the Fighting. I got through both of them. And all of a sudden, I was like, well, I've got the game now. He can't score it back now. Even though it was really close, I'd already done the math. And I was like, I don't think it's going to be possible to lose from here. But that was my, on paper, the closest result. And he played it really well. He just kept using those little scarabs to steal my objectives.
They're quite good at that.
And it's funny, because Possessed are really good at getting through them, because they're 4 wounds and they're 2 damage each on them. But that kept getting the fire pinball on them, and it just makes such a difference.
It really does, yeah. Economant's buff is huge for them.
So, yeah, 3-point win.
Well, you know, it's just efficient use of points, mate. Easy. Cool. So, you're 2-0. Feeling good?
Unusually good, because I normally always lose my first game.
Yeah. So, what was your final?
Well, I thought I'd have a nice, easy game for game 3. So, I played a little-known player called Mike Costello.
Never heard of him. I bet he does nothing. Doesn't do anything.
He's not famous in the hobby at all, being one of the founding members of Vanguard Tactics. So, Mike was running Night Lords. So it was Chaos Space Marines versus Chaos Space Marines. He was actually preparing for the Unconquerables event. He was attending the following weekend. As I say, he was running Night Lords. He was an absolute gent. We had a good time. And he taught me a lot, actually, about how to play the army throughout the game.
Okay.
And I think really this one just came down to the fact that whilst clearly I felt like he was technically a better player than I was, we both had a couple of swings of sort of fortune at times, and I felt like it was getting away from me. But really, in the end, just bio just outmuscles. What bio does is doing what all Chaos Space Marine armies want to do, but better. Their thing of like -2 leadership or whatever it is, I've forgotten now. It was barely impactful in the game, whereas my fighting everything on death was massively impactful. It was
quite useful, isn't it?
Ultimately, I think that was just a case of he ran out of steam to deal with me, and the way he could deal with me was to charge me, and then I would win anyway because I was quicker. My units are faster, so I could sort of stage when they were going to happen a little bit better. But yeah, clearly a better player, but just unfortunate that it was a rock, paper, scissors, and he was sort of running rock into my scissors, paper.
Yeah. Okay, so that means you finished the day 3.
Yeah, and that's, I think, might have been the first time that had ever happened other than the Faustus event the other week. So
That's pretty cool. Did you go and celebrate and experience the nightlife of
Hollywood? No, I went home. I travelled, shout out to my friend Jack, who I travelled with. He sort of drove us there and back both days, which was lovely because then we could sort of do like a briefing on the way in and a debrief on the way back. We're sort of talking
about... Yeah, it's good to talk, isn't it?
You need to sort of decompress, don't you, and sort of figure out. And at that point as well, we knew our pairings for the next day, so we could start to strategize for that. He was running Blood Angels, and I think at that point he was 1-2. So he was going thinking that, he had a little bit of something to prove.
Yeah, I see. So, seamless segue there, because what then did you have to contend with?
I went back away from Chaos Space Marines back to another army that's going really well, Adeptus Sororitas, the Sisters of Battle. Angus. And I, yeah, and it's Angus Patterson, who's a great Sisters player. I've played him a few times. Been thoroughly beaten by him before as well. He knows his army inside out. I've never seen him play anything else, so I don't know if he does or not, but he certainly seems to be all on the Sisters. And it shows, because he plays them really well. And this was another case of, oh God, I'm going to lose this if I don't do something quite significant early on.
He scored so well.
He had a classic army of load of Sisters, load of Repentia, Morgan Val, Celestine, and then Retrovious, basically. And he was very, very careful with his measuring. He was like checking his angles and sort of, if you move here, I can do this. If you, you know, if I move here, I can get an angle on that. And I'm like, yeah, absolutely. No issue with any of that. And so we were playing the game, and then I spot an opportunity because all of his firstly, I've charged my possess right through the middle because I was like, well, I'm not going to get there otherwise. And he's got a load of retributes, Nicola load. Yeah, fine, that happens. I also have a Venom Crawler in this, sorry, I forgot to mention that earlier, which was died all the time, was kind of rubbish, but it did serve as a really nice distraction in this game because he was kind of deploying further away, so I couldn't hit those retributors with it, so that was quite helpful. Okay. And yeah, the board, we turned it, and I actually realized his retributors had moved to one side to deal with that and some possessed, and on the other side of the board I had, I don't know, my Demon Prince, some cultists and nothing else, but on his side I could see that all of his Repentia were over there. So what I did was I launched my Lord Discordant over there. I'd given my Lord Discordant the Intoxicating Elixir, which is a once per game relic in the fight phase you can drink, and it means you can only suffer 3 wounds in that fight phase.
It's quite strong.
Yeah, it's really strong, absolutely game-breaking at times. And this was one of those times where he brought all of his Repentia over, thought, oh yeah, I'm going to get a Demon Prince and I'm going to get a Lord Discordant. Drank it. I had told him about it before, and he was like, oh my God, I forgot about it. You told me, but I forgot about it. And I was like, yeah, cool, 3 wins. Killed all of the Repentia. and that really swung it. He did make a really, really clever play with Celestine, because obviously Celestine can get back up. He wanted to tag my possessed, kill a load of them. And he also had 2 Death Cult Assassins, and he placed them in a really clever way so that Celestine could kill a couple of possessed. They would be able to fight back, but they'd only be able to hit the Death Cult Assassins, or only like 1 or 2 possessed would be able to get to Celestine. Unfortunately, okay, for him, Celestine rolled like 15 mortal wounds, it felt like, and killed all of the possessed, which meant they could pile in away from the Death Cult Assassins, and like they could declare more attacks onto Celestine. Ended up killing her.
Amazing.
She then regenerated, and then I smited her the next time. So it was a really clever play. Had it worked, it would have been absolutely genius, and I'd be talking about it still, but I'm still giving it.
Would it have won in the game? No.
I don't know. Maybe. It was a big moment. It was a big moment because it would have stopped me then having the next turn, then the squad behind, because I think she had tagged another squad as well, were then completely free, and they'd rampaged all of the retributors, and he had Morgan Val there and stuff, and it just all sort of collapsed around there.
Okay.
So yeah, so that one, again, that one I do have to score for 87-56 in the end.
Solid win, and we'd spoken about how, you know, he's got a lot of melter, it's going to be a really tough game, it's probably the hardest match left for you, so you getting that win puts you now as the only undefeated
player. Yeah, it does, yeah, which you're is really unfamiliar territory.
Yeah, you've already played and beaten second and third place, which means in the final, basically, you are playing...
So I'm playing Paulie Wallace, and he was playing his beautiful Drakari. I think he probably plays for Real Space Raiders. He was a lovely guy. I'd never played him before, but I had heard of him. It was always kind of weird going and playing. It was the same with Michael Stello. It's weird going and playing someone you've heard of, almost like...
That's how people feel when they play us.
Not me, that's for sure. Maybe they will now, I don't know.
So
he was playing Drakari, and I hadn't played Drakari with Bile before, but I looked at the list and I thought, well, all this list wants to do is punch me in the face, and all I want him to do is punch me in the face. Because no matter what, I get to do my thing and he doesn't necessarily get to do his. So I really made it my point this time to run directly through the center of his army and just kicking and screaming right through. He did try. He did some clever things with Fight Last. I'm like, I don't care because I fight anyway. For all my free interrupts from Mark of Slaanesh. So again, I'm often still getting to fight if he's more charging me with multiple things. And then we have Drazar come into the middle and kills a load of possessed. And then he fights again and kills a load more possessed. I'm like, okay, well, I think, how did it happen? I can't remember if they then, I think they died, but they were in combat with something else. So they killed everything apart from Drazar. I thought, well, you know what? I'm not happy with that, Drazar. So I threw my Master of Executions in as a little bit of a missile. And did something like 8 mortal wounds, and Drazar was gone. And I was like, okay, well, that's the game then. he just ran out of stuff. It's a really, really unfavorable matchup for any combat army, to be honest, but specifically Drakari, because so much of my stuff then is strength 6. So I'm wounding everything on 2s. A lot of it's 2 damage. So even when things are a bit more resilient, I'm getting through them. It was a win. It was another win.
It was a win, and we spoke a bit about the game, but I was like, I just can't see how Lee loses this. But you never, because of just Drakari just wanting to be that combat army, but you don't want to say that.
No, exactly. Because I texted you, I was like, what do I do? And then, we have a group chat, and I texted and said, this is what I've got, because some of our guys play Drakari, some advice, whatever. And then obviously you'd message me separately, like, just be calm and you can win the game.
The game's in your... It was a nice position to be in, I think,
I felt quite comfortable because I've played Drakari with Tom, obviously, so many times. There wasn't anything that was really going to catch me off guard anymore. And whilst Drakari is still good, they just don't want to play that game.
No, it's a horrible match.
Because what I found was that even though they want to kill us, like they want to kill me, they're not actually that good at killing 3 wound models. They're good at killing 2 wound models. But a lot of it's wasted on the Chosen and on the Possessed, which also have invulnerables.
So with that, you were a Warhammer 40k GT champion.
To be honest, it's a really surreal feeling. When I went up to sort of collect the trophy, I didn't really ever expect to actually win something. Obviously, I podiumed a couple of events, but it felt great to actually win it.
Yeah, it is.
Such a nice feeling.
It's very cool. Well deserved, because you know you try so hard and you put so many hours into your practice, don't you?
Yeah, with my one practice game in this. Yeah,
exactly. So for those who don't know, Lee doesn't really ever play games apart from tournaments. Yeah. So this must be an innate talent.
Luck. Good at rolling dice.
Thank
you. Yeah, it was a good event. I'd go back. Obviously, I've got fond memories of it now. Five great opponents. I definitely felt like I learned a lot. Like I said, I was able to identify the win condition quite early, and that was the key thing really for me.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So you've played that tournament of Creations of Bile. You had an event the weekend straight after. Were you thinking any changes to the list?
Yes, I was actually. I realised that the army was really good at killing stuff. And I thought, well, I've got some things in this list that don't kill stuff very well. And the main thing actually was the Master of Possession. So Master of Possession is really, really popular at the moment because he's in all the lists because he has the power to bring models back. Heal unit of possessed and bring one back. But I actually found that either things were getting killed entirely or they're being ignored, and one possessed back is great and all, but what I really wanted was something even punchier. So what I did was I took out the Master of Possession, which is normally a bit of a faux pas, I think. And I took out the Venom Crawler. That one I didn't miss. And I put another Lord of Scorn in. I was so impressed by it the first time. I was like, I need another one of those. Something that can move 13 inches with that many attacks, of that much quality. Let's get another one in there. Because that much reach, you know, you can kind of touch anything within 2 turns. So yeah, that was basically all I changed. I think I put another Chaos Spawn in.
Okay, nice. Well, Creations of Bile fans, you probably want to skip the next little bit of this video because we're now going to move away from Creations of Bile. We're going to talk about my event, and then we'll come back to see if Lee could make it 2 tournament victories in a row. But no, for anyone who follows the Facebook page and that sort of thing, you'll know that some of us recently went to Battlefield Birmingham. We've been going to those events for quite a few years now. It's always good fun. It used to be at like the Cadbury's World kind of like club where people would hang out outside, and unfortunately that burnt down.
No more chocolate.
It's now been all the chocolate. Yeah, I don't think they actually kept chocolate there, but it's now been moved to the exotic place of Dudley. Oh,
beautiful.
So it was Dave, the two Jamies, Paul, and myself.
It's a good crowd.
Five some got up nice and early. 5:20 my alarm was, not to complain or anything. We headed over to sunny Dudley. I'd not been there before, some of the others had. It is a giant warehouse, basically, off the back of a shop. And if you think your toilet was badly,
oh no.
Well, this was something out of a horror film.
Please tell the audience in grotesque detail.
I don't want to. Basically, every time I went in, I had to go.
Oh God! Was it just one?
There was just one. Basically, outhouse.
And how big was this event? How many people were there?
So it was a 54-person event.
Yes.
So you had just this basic, just a giant kind of like factory floor kind of thing with all these tables across. It was the first. So normally, terrain is really poor. It's just like random stuff. And also, it's never ITC events or anything like that. He's never done those before. He always done his own version of scoring.
Okay.
This was the first time he embraced ITC. And the first time he did proper terrain. Initial reports on, or initial feelings on the terrain was that it wasn't really very much. He'd done a terrain map. He had shown up how it would be for day one and then set up for day two. It was ruins on Perspex.
Yeah, similar to what we had at Wickham, actually.
And the pictures kind of made you think there is nowhere to hide. Now, once you got there, actually, it wasn't quite as bad as you thought, but there was one really key issue. There were two center L's. They were dense, difficult ground, but they were not obscuring.
What, just not tall enough?
So, exactly. Yeah. So, basically, the entire middle of the battlefield was wide open. And this just causes a whole load of problems for a load of different armies. It was a really easily solved conundrum. You literally just said those middle ruins were obscuring, but you keep the holes there. So that means if an army wants to go and sit on those perspex sheets in the middle of the board, they can be seen, but they can at least sit behind them and it's hard to get an angle on them. It meant that a lot of armies struggled to stage. It was just... It was a bit frustrating, really. It was almost laughable in some games, I think, really, depending on angles and that sort of thing. So that was a shame. And hopefully he changes that for next time. Because other than that, actually, he's got a really nice set of terrain. It was a really nice atmosphere. I had five nice opponents. That's something that I think you should probably change. So I was running Harlequins. It's been a process. I've been making lots of progress with the army list. I believe the current best list out there for Harlequins is 7 or 8 Star Weavers, similar amount of troops, and you just really lean into that mission playing thing. I've got 3 units of 2 bikes in my list because I don't want to paint any more Star Weavers. But also I think they're really good for the game plan. Yeah. For those who don't know, a lot of Harlequin light lists are based very much around turn one, throw something in the deployment zone to score behind enemy lines and deadly performance. Turn two, do the same thing. By the time you get to turn three, you've hopefully got enough stuff threatening that you can then start scoring fours for behind enemy lines and just be in a deployment zone causing havoc. That's the general play. And I find the bikes are really good for that because, you know, they have some decent shooting as well. So I had 3 units of 2 bikes. I had 9 troop units, 2 of which were naked, 7 which had all the pistols and 1 combat weapon, 6 Star Weavers, and then 4 characters. I had 2 Shadow Seers to help me do Weave Veil, which is a psychic secondary. I had a troop master who goes really far, and I had the Solitaire. I'd not used the Solitaire before. I was using the Death Jester with Mortal Wounds previously, and decided to drop in for that. I played four practice games. I'd beaten Tau twice. I'd beaten Dark Angels and I'd beaten Leeds Christian Zabal, and I felt pretty confident. The only games I really hate is Knights. I've played Knights a few times now.
They just don't kill them, do you? And you can't really upset them a lot of the time because they're accounting for five.
Exactly. So they're really hard to drop off and to knock off objectives because of the five. That means I have to put five troops and a Star Weaver there. So I lose the trading war because I have to commit so many resources just to kill one knight, and then I lose a lot of my resources back. If you just really hide a lot and just focus on your secondaries, you can probably score up to 70 or 75, maybe 80 points. But you then lose because they score like 90 because they've got good secondaries and primary as well. So I found the knights a really hard matchup. I was hoping to avoid knights, and there were six knight lists there at 54. So I was a bit worried about that. So the first draw came out, and the good news was that I had managed to avoid the knights. The bad news was that I'd drawn Vic Vijay, who some of you may know is current world number two. He does quite well at pretty much all of the events.
But Chris, where are you ranked in the world?
Worse than number two. Okay. Yeah, worse than two. I'm not number one in the world, unfortunately. So it was going to be a really tough game. But at the same time, thinking about the matchup and speaking to different people and having just played Lee, I was like, oh, I think I've got a chance here, you know, because I'm like, you've got these 10 Terminators and they're scary. But if I can avoid them and I cannot get shot to pieces by Blastmasters, then actually I can just outscore him. He's got really poor secondary choices. I think I've
got a chance.
And we've played and we found out our pairings on the Tuesday. And that was horrendous because I spent...
That's the problem. That's too early, isn't it?
I spent the next 4 days just constantly thinking about the game. And eventually I got to a point where I just gave up because I was just like, oh, no, I know roughly what I'm going to do, but I can't think about it anymore. So got to the table. Vic's alive. No one's played him before. I've played him once before. He's such a lovely guy. Really, really nice. Lovely opponent. We had a really great game. He went first, and I deployed quite defensively because I was really worried because Emperor's Children can auto-advance six, they can do a prayer for advance and charge, and they can have a six on their charge. So he has like a 23-inch threat range on those
terminators, crazy, isn't it?
Which are like unkillable. It's terrifying. So I deployed quite defensively, and he just pushed everything forward just enough. So the Terminators were threatening in the middle. He warp-timed them. Some Troop Masters moved, and Abaddon moved up. Not Troop Masters, Noise Marines, sorry. Moved, and Abaddon moved up slightly towards one flank. More Noise Marines moved out, and the Venom Crawler out.
Quite an aggressive start then.
It was, but he didn't push too far. And what he did was he screened it. So basically, his deployment zone had a nice little area of hiding of... well, nothing was ever more like more than 3 inches away. So he's got a heroic intervention strat for anything for 3 inches. So the Harlequin strategy is, right, I want to go throw something in your deployment zone and get myself deadly performance and behind enemy lines. Because I deployed quite defensively, couldn't actually get there. If I wanted to fire and fade, I'd end up within 3 inches or
That's
something.
That's clever.
In order to avoid being Twilight Pathwayed, like have that, if I could cast Twilight Pathways and move something up, but in order to position myself so I couldn't have the power denied, I was too far away to land in his deployment zone. So he just screened it out perfectly. So my first turn was a bit of a non-event. Furthermore, due to the stupid lack of line of sight, hiding terrain, his Blastmasters just through the length of the board had managed to... Two Blastmasters had killed two Star Weavers.
I mean, I can't kill a Star Weaver with a whole army of Chaos Knights.
Yeah. I mean, it's statistically unlikely. If you think a Blastmaster is three shots, hitting on fours, no rerolls, wounding on threes, and then I've got four up in one rerolling with luck dice, you shouldn't get through two wounds.
It wasn't just hot rolling then? Is that all it was? I think they're heavy, so they do also explode on sixes.
Yeah, and he rattles it. They both rolled two sixes on the hit roll. So, I mean, that was it. That was just a bit frustrating, really. And that was kind of, I was stumped for my first turn. I must have used like 15, 20 minutes up just on my clock, just trying to work out what on earth I could do and come up with a plan for the next few turns. And what I quickly realised is I was a bit screwed. And so because I couldn't restage anywhere, I moved mostly around one flank, but moved also tentatively down around the other, which was stupid. I should have just completely redeployed, turned the whole game into Hammer and Anvil, and then tried to play from there because there was a little bit of a place to hide. And that was kind of the death knell. He was able to see the stuff, shoot the stuff. My shooting didn't really do anything. And he kind of just chewed through me quickly over the next few turns. I think we called it on turn four. It finished 95-58 to him.
How different is the game if you don't lose those Star Weavers, do you think?
I guess it makes me last longer. I had to do like a Hail Mary where I was like, I'm going to charge my solitaire into your Demon Prince, which is going to make me fight last, and I'm going to hope I survive.
Because that really is a Hail Mary.
And he chose an assassinate, so I could be, and it was at the point where it's pointless trying to hide my characters because if they don't do what they're supposed to do, I'm just going to lose anyway. Yeah. So that doesn't matter. And yeah, he would like roll them one at a time to try, and he had re-rolling hits, and then he had a thing where he could turn a dice roll into a six, and he just did the required five mortal wounds without ever actually needing to do anything else. There was a funny moment where my troop master charged in to Noise Marines. He was like, "I might overwatch, you know." I was like, "Okay." And six shots, and he rolled four sixes, which all exploded. And these were all two damage, and I was suddenly rolling my saves with no luck. I was like, my troop master's going to die on the charge here. I got lucky. I beat the odds, and I managed to survive with one win, but it was just like a funny moment. But he played it really well. Vic went on. Also, the other thing, the night before, he'd played the other Harlequin player at the event on TTS.
Yeah, so he really was ready for you.
And actually, on the final game of the tournament, he played that Harlequin player again because they were the undefeated players, and he beat him again, like 90-something, 60-something.
I don't feel too bad then, though.
I did not feel too bad. He thinks the game is a lot closer if Harlequins go first, which I think is probably right because I can position myself, stage, get into his deployment zone, start the secondary scoring and stuff. So, disappointing, but at the same time, it was always going to be a super hard game. I would have liked to have made it closer.
That's fair.
Game two, I got the... So one other thing to note, this competition was random pairings in bracket. So you never played the person who was next to you who scored the same sort of score to you. It was just completely random. So I played some random other person who'd lost. And I was against Stefan with his salamanders. Stefan was exuberant and extroverted, and we had a lovely time, a right character, drinking from a hip flask. He did do that thing, which does annoy me a bit, where he rocks up and goes, I played this game twice before. I know I literally can't win. We'll have a good time. I'll roll some dice. But, yeah, I know I can't win this game. Because it just immediately takes away any sense of accomplishment.
Yeah, if you do win, you should have won. And if you lose, well, then that's just embarrassing for you, right?
Yeah, exactly. So
it's a weird tone.
Takes that away. Yeah, it's a bit frustrating. But I went first. He had a lot of stuff in Deep Strike, like two units of Flame Aggressors, Eradicators. So I went first. So I knew I'd have two turns to screen him out. They were in Strategic Reserve. I could dictate exactly where they went to. I always felt, I think at turn two, I knew I'd won this game. He rolled poorly. I rolled incredibly well. And let's not take, like, he shot so much stuff into my stuff and it just did not die. It doesn't change the game, I don't believe, because my secondaries were just a lot better than him, and we can both score primary by sitting on our two objectives. And I kind of threatened one flank for three turns just to knock him off from scoring for a little while, whilst, you know, coming down the other side. But I always felt pretty pretty comfortable in that game. But it still finished 96-81, but, you know, he had bottom of turn, could score a bit.
Yeah.
Now, this is a game which is probably the most frustrating one for me. I now play Blood Angels. And I played Blood Angels once before when we played at that team tournament. I played Scotland. And I lost that game by 4 or 5 points. And it's a really hard game of just running away all the time. This is an interesting one. He had taken Well, he had deployed 1,000 points off the board.
Oh, wow.
So two Sanguinary Guard units, two Terminator units, and a Vanguard Vet squad, I think. They were all off the board in Deep Strike. He had hardly anything on. It was Abandoned Sanctuary, so he couldn't fire his Death Company forward.
Kind of nice mission to play them on, at least.
Yeah, exactly. So he went first, did some shuffling, put some units up the board. I was like, well, I've got a turn to screen. So again, I spent like 10 minutes getting all of my angles and everything spread out and covered and everything. And I felt in quite a good place. I killed the stuff that he'd put out. And I was like, right, come and get it. So he deep strikes down. Now, this is where we have a bit of a rules issue. And I think we've, after the game, I think we've sorted it out and we know the true thing. But just for anyone listening, he had his units in deep strike. The strategic reserve rule is that you can come in an inch from your battlefield edge. So I had some bikes in his deployment zone scoring behind enemy lines. He brought down a unit of Terminators within an inch of his battlefield edge and put them straight into combat with my bikes. Because he was like, look, you see here in strategic reserve, it says that you can do that. So I was like, well, yeah, but they're in deep strike. Isn't that different?
I think that, like, I think that's different.
Yeah, he was like, no, I think it's the same thing. I was like, fine, okay. He did this multiple times in the game, turn 3, 4, and 5. And afterwards, because a couple of the guys, Paul and Jamie, had seen it, and they went and like looked away and read the rules. And afterwards, we had a big discussion on it, and we think they are different.
I think they are.
And you can't do that. Yeah. So if you are deep strike, you cannot come in an inch from your board edge, is what we've said.
Because, I mean, you specifically have to pay CP to go to strat reserves.
Yeah, it's a different thing. So, yeah, well, it's good
to know.
Is
there a reason
now
why you didn't ask TO or anything like that to rule on it?
I didn't trust the TO. Okay. the guy that runs the event, Harry, he doesn't strike me as the most 40K, biggest 40K aficionado.
Okay.
It sounds silly, but after my first turn one and how we'd done these turns, I was like, I don't think it's going to make any difference. Yeah. I feel like I'm screening well. I can dictate where his stuff goes. And I was like, it's fine. The Terminators come down and kill those two.
Yeah, it wasn't. So yeah, as a trade, fine. That's fine, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So he comes down. I kind of do my light run. I don't actually do my light runaway strap. Don't think I didn't need to. And he kills one Star Weaver and those two bikes. And I'm like, sweet. He's now put a lot of stuff. He's got two Sandguard in deep strike. That is it. This is my go turn. So, on the right-hand side, he's got 5 Assault Marines in cover. I put some boats over there. They're all going to die. In the middle, I put some bikes and a Solitaire across to deal with the 6 Sandguard. And on the left, I put some boats in to deal with his Death Company. The Troopmaster gets out because he's going to go and finish, mop up any Death Company that are still there. And then defend the CP, hop back into the boat. My opponent has chosen Blades of Sanguinius, which is a secondary, which means he picks a character, my Troopmaster. Gets 5 points for killing it, 5 points for killing it in combat, 5 points for killing it with Dante. Last time the Scottish guy chose it, he scored 0. I'm like, you're scoring 0 on it this time. Over on the right-hand side, I get my shooting order slightly wrong, and I leave 1 alive. In the middle, my shooting kills 3 Sanguinary Guards, so the Solitaire can go finish that off. And on the left-hand side, I completely mess up and I kill 1 Death Company. I'm like, oh, no, this isn't good. Troopmaster's going to have to
really go big in the yardage. Yeah.
Then, on the right-hand side, I charge in my troop to kill that one final Assault Intercessor. For some reason, I panic and I'm like, oh, what if I don't kill him? It doesn't matter in reality. So I spend my CP to do Mortals on the charge. With the Embrace, kill him. Cool. I now come across and I'm like, ah, where do I start? My Solitaire or my Troopmaster? Because, like, I can't start with the Troopmaster because he'll probably die to the 4 Death Company. So start with the Troopmaster, who does absolutely nothing. The guy tanks because, you know, it's only -2. The guy tanks it and my Troopmaster's only killed 1. And I'm like, oh, no. And then I realise I'd spent my last CP on that mortal wound charge, and I can't now consolidate him into the boat.
Oh no, that's sad.
And at that point, mentally, I tilt quite massively. I'm like, I'm really annoyed because I'm like, that was horrendous. And then to add an insult to injury, he intervenes with the into the solitaire with the three sanguinary guard, gets through 10 wounds, and I rolled 7 ones and twos. So he just dies. And it's just a disaster of a turn. And I've gone from my turn two being really confident and comfortable to all of a sudden falling apart. And I had to, like, whilst he was having his turn, I had to sit there for like a minute and just try and get all the anger and like the frustration out and just move on and be like, right, come on, we can still play this game. But he just piled everything through me at that point. And I just didn't have the stuff alive. I just, that 10 points from Blaine to Sanguinius, Dante failed to kill the troop master on one wound, which was quite funny, but he still killed Dante with everything else. He got 10 points for that, which was really frustrating. And for the rest of the game, he just kept charging. On my right flank was so strong, I went through his deployment zone, but he kept deep striking stuff down from the inch away straight into combat and killing the thing. He would have been having to make those charges, so I might not have lost as
much. I definitely think that's the, unfortunately, was played wrong.
We got to my final turn and we worked out I couldn't quite catch up, and it finished 92-89.
That's really frustrating because I've made those sorts of mistakes before. I think, what earth was I thinking? I knew what I wanted to do, why have I just suddenly panicked in this case and done something that's probably cost you the result?
Yeah, 100%. You know, like, I mean, my troop master should have just immediately run away for the whole game. He shouldn't have been there.
Yeah.
But I was screaming him well.
He thought you were in a commanding position.
I kept, you know, I wasn't letting his stuff get to me. So I thought I'd be okay. So that was really frustrating. So I was pretty annoyed. That evening, we went to our hotel, which was quite the experience of a hotel.
Was it dodgy?
It was quite dodgy. And it's attached to a Peaky Blinders themed restaurant. Okay. And there was like a 70th birthday going on.
Did you gatecrash it?
In as much as we watched as they had a lot of fun. We had to wait an hour for our food, all the fun stuff. And then the two Jamies and myself decided to go and investigate what Dudley had to offer on the nightlife. And the answer is not much. we decided there were a few places we almost went into and then decided we didn't want to, you know, put our lives in peril. So we just ended up coming back. And then had an appalling night's sleep in very uncomfortable beds. So
great first day. Then,
yeah, exactly. So I was loving life. I really was loving life. And what presented me on Sunday morning? But yet more Blood Angels.
Yeah, I've done this. Right.
This is revenge time. And Mark was a lovely guy. His army was incredible.
Oh, he sent me the picture of the thing with Sanguinary Guard. Absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah, he was a lovely guy. And he plays a lot of AOS and fantasy and stuff, but he just dabbles in the 40K. And his list was just like well-rounded, but it wasn't, you know, he had 2 units of Sanguinary Guard, he had the Death Company, but he also had Hellblasters, for example. And I was like, right, okay, this is my game. And he started off playing quite cagey. The overwhelming issue is a lot of my shooting is Shuriken, and Marine sat in cover against Shuriken is a 2-up save, and it's just really hard work to get through that. So I can't really, like, pick people off. I have to wait for them to come to me. And he eventually came to me, and basically he just launched himself down one flank and took over the primary. So I was winning on the secondary, but he was winning on the primary. And it came down to the fact that on his turn 3 or 4, his Blade Guard were in my deployment zone, and I had to put everything, which was like 4 troop squads of shooting and everything, in to try and kill these guys, and I failed. I'd already let him get access to my Shadow Seer with the Vanguard because I'd just forgotten and just left my Shadow Seer out. So that was 3 points for assassinate. and I left my troop master out over there to go and kill these vanguards, and there were two vanguards left. So I was like, well, I've got one CP. I'm going to charge in my troops and I'm going to do the mortal wounds.
Not this again.
On the blade vanguard to try and kill them as close as I can. Because obviously my troop master over on the other side, he's going to kill two vanguards.
Of course,
vanguards,
yeah. How could he not?
How could that possibly fail? So I do my mortals on the charge. I don't kill the blade guard. And then the troop master gets through five wounds and he rolls 4 out of 5 4-ups. And the one vanguard vet one-shots my troop master.
That's really funny. I mean, it's not, but it is.
And that's 4 points just gone. And then on turn four, he tries to rod. He's failed rod a lot of times. He's not, rod was a terrible choice. He's on zero for it. He's got two troops left on in a quarter. He's like, well, I might as well try the rod. And he rolls the two. So he gets 4 points for that. We only got to turn four because game was quite slowly played, shall we say. And I lost 68-65.
So what's the rod?
So it was the rods or me just throwing away my troop master.
What happened? What's going on with you?
Just two key mistakes in two games. And, you know, like, it was just two classic cases of, like, this will happen, and just not being negative enough to think of the potential of what happens if it goes.
I mean, normally I'm a big believer in playing with confidence like that, but...
Yeah, no, it was just so I'm basically now permanently worried about my troop master forevermore. So, yeah, in hindsight, it's like, what are you thinking? But at the time, it was just like, well, obviously a troop master kills those two vanguards. And even if they don't, you know, like, that one vanguard's not going to kill my troop master. Like, I have to kill this stove over here. But we were really running out of time, so we were rushing a lot. And you just can't make the right decisions. So, yeah, that was frustrating, and I was now in a really bad mood. But Mark was a lovely guy, don't get me wrong. Final game was against Tom, he works out with Stephen Box. He's a personal trainer. He's 6'4" tall and 6'4" wide in pure muscle.
So you're already feeling adequate.
What do you mean? But he was using Black Legion. So he had Abaddon, he had 10 unkillable Terminators, 10 Chosen, and other stuff. Tom was quite an inexperienced tournament player. And so we've deployed, and it's end-to-end, and he's put his entire army behind the ruins. And I'm like, why has he not just sat them in the ruins in cover? He must be really scared of my shooting. Weird. Anyway, I get first turn, I move up half-board, kill all his cultists, fire and fade into his deployment zone. He's like, oh, you're not going to quite make it for fire and fade? I'm like, yeah, I am. I'm sat in your deployment zone. He's like, well, no, because the deployment zone's here. I'm like, no, it's not. It's up to the ruin. He had deployed his whole army behind that ruin because that's what he thought the deployment zone was. I had no idea. I just assumed he was being redefensive. I felt really bad because it just put him massively on the back.
That's not a fast army, is it? He's not going to make that speed up.
As soon as he deployed there, I was like, I've won the game.
Yeah.
Because his stuff went against me. He then charged it. He did the classic, which anyone does when they play against Harlequins. He moved his Chosen out and went, right, I'm going to melt to that Star Weaver and kill it.
And no, like, you're not.
Mate. And obviously he missed with most of the shots. I failed to wound or I saved it. And I was like, yes. I'm afraid that's not really how you go about killing Harlequins, I'm afraid. Then he charged his legionaries in and killed like one biker. The Raptors charged into a Star Weaver and failed to kill it. But, you know, he made some interest. Like, I'd positioned myself quite aggressively because I was like, I want to kill those Raptors. And I failed miserably. He just made like 6 out of 6 5 up saves kind of thing. And what he meant was if he played it right, he could have charged his Raptors in and tagged all my stuff. And I've had then to roll off to see if I could escape that.
Raptors don't have that role. And you're thinking warp talons.
Not Raptors, warp talons. Sorry. And that would have meant I'd then used all those troops in boats to kill those five warp talons. then his chosen would have been free to march up the board. Instead, I could use everything else to go and kill those chosen. So what happened was about five gunboats of troops just launched themselves into this. And I just completely took down that flank. By turn three, he had Abaddon and 10 Terminators.
Yeah.
He just made some very, just inexperienced player moves. Like, it was stuff like I'd killed 18 out of 20 cultists. So on his backfield objective, he left those two cultists there to hold his primary when the Terminators were right by it. And he could have quite easily strung his Terminators out to hold those two objectives, but he didn't, which meant I was like, oh, I'll just kill those two cultists and now I hold the objective. Like, those sorts of beginning. He was also a bit, you know, fed up and frazzled, I think, and not being the best event for him. So we kind of, it was like a 97-55 win.
Pretty comfortable. Nice way for you to finish, at least.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I didn't have any satisfying games.
No, it sounds like they're either gimmies that you should have won anyway.
Yeah.
And then a couple that should have been that weren't.
Should have been wins that weren't, and then the Vic game where I didn't feel like I could, I gave the best account of myself. So it was a frustrating weekend. Finished 30 out of 54. But again, you take it in the vacuum or the specific event, you can explain why it went wrong, I guess. So yeah, that's me done probably until LGT, unless I do like an RTT or something. I've got 9 5 man units, and I'm thinking of dropping putting two together. Yeah. Have a 10-man combat.
Okay. Yeah.
And drop the pistols and then just have that little punch. They need a lot of CP, but they will go in and they will do a decent amount of damage.
How do you get them around in that case?
They would just start in my deployment zone and strike out towards the middle.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was doing with the possessed, was sort of just staging them and waiting.
Yeah.
I'll get my chance. Exactly, I'll wait.
When that sanguinary guard come for me, I can go in, spend the 3 CP, just do some mortals.
When you really need to get rid of that one thing, you can.
Yeah, exactly. So I might try that. It works all right on the UKTC train.
Yeah.
There's always some place to hide them. Just deploy them in the middle each time and be like, they're going to sit there until I've got something to charge.
And they're quick enough that you can keep anything else really at arm's length.
Yeah, exactly. So that would then give me... So I've only got 9 units, so it'd give me 7 units and a bomb, which I think is probably about nice. So yeah,
not your favourite event, but still good learning. You'll definitely take some things away from that.
I've played a lot of Blood Angels. Yeah. I've played Marines all weekend. So I like to not
play something else. Yeah.
So whilst we were off, and shout out to Paul for going 3-2, Jamie went 2-1-2, Dave, other Jamie and myself went 2-3. Tom was at the Unconquerables going 2-3 against a lot of very high quality opposition with the Inari. And he's done a little report on the Facebook page for anyone that wants to read it. And Lee, you were off to go try and win
another tournament. Yeah, I thought, let's try and do another.
So, where did you go?
So, this was my second event in 2 weeks, which is the first time I've ever done that. I think I learned about myself. I don't like to do that. It was too much. Yep. By the end of it, I was exhausted. I was sort of not sleeping well because I was thinking about why am I too much. You know, I'm sure anyone's played a whole day event. So, that night's sleep is always terrible. But this was the Hertz GT, so Hertfordshire GT, hosted by the guys at Toys of Mass Destruction. So they are one of the sort of the bigger clubs around. They seem to be well represented in their red hoodies wherever I see, wherever I go to events. And it was in Harpenden, which is not far from here. A very, very nice sort of commuter town, city, I'm not sure what it is. I think it's a town that people would travel to go work in London for their nice banking jobs. It's that sort of nice, very middle class place. Mm-hmm. And we were, I can't remember the name of the place now, but it was a, felt like a theatre. It was like a theatre leisure centre type thing. And credit to them, this is one of the nicest places I've ever played 40K. So it's really modern, sleek, air conditioning, worked perfectly, toilets were nice, there was a, it was just nice. All the tables were good, they were running... ITC sort of standard terrain, I don't know what you call that, LGT terrain, I guess, on all the tables. They were all the standard kits. It was all Painted Dynasty, all sort of different mats. So there's a bit of variety. And there were 40 players there, so they managed to get 20 tables into the space. And I really liked it. So there was parking nearby, so that's always nice as well. Big leisure centre car park, so that was good. No stress there. I was a minute away from the venue. And then you're in Harpenden town centre, basically. So whilst it's quite expensive to buy things, there's a Sainsbury's, there's a Waitrose, there's an M&S, you know, the upper class of supermarkets from there.
Of course, yeah.
A sandwich was like £4, but, you know, it is what it is.
What was the calibre of player like at this event?
So it was really interesting, actually, because I thought, being that it was the Unconquerables that weekend, I thought, well, all the big sharks are going to be there, aren't they? Turns out we had a fair number of sharks there too. Who was there? That was, I guess, the biggest name that was there was the other half of Vanguard Tactics. Stephen Box was there for day one.
Yep.
Mysteriously didn't turn up for day two. I played a number of players from Vanguard Tactics, other players. So Paul Bridge was one of my opponents. He's sort of one of the more highly ranked players that were there. Clements was there with the Space Wolves. Who else did we have? We had quite a few.
Ben Jones
was there, thank you. Yeah, so it was
Jack Downing.
It was kind of a bit of a VT takeover, actually.
It was.
I thought that would be Unconquerables. I thought this would be nice, this would be easy. It wasn't.
Who knew? So you were going with the bile.
Yeah,
again.
With the bile. With the slight change to the list. Even Killia, basically, was the plan.
So you, your first game, you're thinking, in an ideal world, you play against a close combat army that just wants to fight you, doesn't have any shooting, but obviously does it a bit worse than you. So did you get that?
Yes. And there is a recurring theme through this event where that happens quite regularly. So my first game was against a really lovely guy called David Philpott, and he was running World Eaters, which, again, like I said about Chikari, World Eaters just want to do exactly the same thing. But they don't do it as well, because no matter what happens, I get to do my thing and they don't. So his list, I looked through it the night before, and I play Chaos Space Marine, so I knew what everything did. And I looked and I thought, oh, this doesn't really make any sense. There's sort of not the synergy here that I would expect to see. I mean, he had the Red Butchers. He had some Blitzerators in their list. He had, which famous for their close combat. I mean, they are slightly better now. He had a Warpsmith in there. Lord Discordant. It was a little bit all over the place.
You have a hodgepodge.
I think it's kind of a mixture of what you had, and he actually had some Havocs. So it was a very rounded list, which I don't think is what you really want for World Eaters. You want Berserkers. Oh, yeah, Berserkers and Drop Pod. That was the thing. But there was a moment where I'm sort of setting up the terrain, and he's like one of the last people to arrive. So I'm basically ready to start the game. And he walks in and he's got this like, one of like these style of boxes that you would get like sprues in, like a big one of those.
Oh, yeah.
All the stuff that he walks up to the table, and the whole thing's all over. So the Lord Discordant smashes into 400 pieces. Oh. The Drop Pod smashes into even more. There's stuff everywhere, and I'm there like, oh my god, I'm so uncomfortable. Can I now kick your face in this game all 40k, please?
Did he have to fix his models?
Yeah, so the Drop Pod was okay. The Lord Discordant needed repair. So we basically put a base down, and was like, that's the Lord Discordant. And then in my turn, he was just sort of there, super gluing it back together. But as far as I'm aware, the models weren't his. He was borrowing them. And it was also, what was also interesting, actually, and I didn't call him on it, and I don't know if anyone else did in the event, but a lot of the models were not battle ready. Many of them weren't based, for instance. I knew in our game it wasn't going to matter even before we started. I thought to myself, if I lose this, then I should probably quit anyway, because he might have been the best player in the world, but he needs to charge me, and I want him to. Yeah. So I really had no excuse for losing that one. He took the secondary, like you described earlier, with Blood Angels, where he has to kill a character in melee with the right character. He nominated my 80-point Master of Executions, which I just never moved the entire game.
No, of course
not.
Well,
I don't need this in this game. If he had taken one of the Lord Discordants, that would have been a bigger problem for me. Whilst they're harder to kill, he definitely could have killed one. And I would have felt a loss in not using it, but he didn't do that. So it ended up being a 92-62 win to me. And again, it was the classic No Prisoners. What else did I take? No Prisoners. It would definitely be Specimens of the Spider. And then lastly, it was Nephilim Data, which I got 12 on in this game. Might be the only time. Nice. I think because he had nothing left, I was actually using the big squad of Possessed to go with two Nephilim Data.
Such a flex.
So that was, it's a rock, paper, scissors game again. And I had I was on the right side of that game.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So you've won for one in terms of playing close combat armies that want to punch you in the face. Hoping for a second game.
Ideally do that again,
yeah.
Yeah, so I've got Blood Angels.
Nice.
Actually, this was, I said I travelled to the first event with my friend Jack. The second event, we also travelled together. First event, he was quite unfortunate that we didn't play each other in the final, actually, in the end. And this time, it was Jack and I round two. So a little bit earlier than we'd have liked. It was his Blood Angels list, which is a very good Blood Angels list. He describes it as Stephen Box copied his list sort of thing. I'm not sure if that's the correct way around, but I'm going to believe him.
Yeah, I definitely.
Lots of Sangreal Yard, lots of Death Company. Plays it very well, understands it. It's only a second event with them, but I knew that he was a very good player and I had to be on my toes. It was the same exact story. He needs to eat things at me. I'm like, great, come at me. And then you've got Discordants going in. Just everything they do is two damage into sort of Marines, three into vehicles, but they were just sort of cutting through everything with their way of attacks. With the new sixes to explode sort of from turn three onwards. I'd also taken a couple of warlord traits on them, so I was one of them was hitting auto wounding on fours to hit, and with an extra AP, so the glaive is then AP 4 damage too. And then the other one, I thought I'll give it the ability to get back up when it dies, so that was quite funny as well. He made a really, really nice play turn one, so I had taken psychic interrogation, and I'd just forgotten quite how quick our angels were, and he found a gap. Managed to tag my possessed and the demon prince and kill the demon prince with hammers. I did then interrupt and kill all of the... I then fought on death and then killed all of them. But by that point, he capped me at 3 points for that secondary, so that was very clever. Ended up being 78-63 to me still.
Okay. So do you think that would mean... if you're having to rely on psychic secondaries, that you think you do need the second psyker?
No, it was just a bad decision. Either just don't take psychic secondary. It wasn't necessary. I was doing perfectly fine with sort of... I was no more likely to get 9 than I was to get 8 on Nephilim, which I maybe should have done, or Banners did, or something like that.
Okay.
It was just a bad choice. Sure. Originally, I designed the list for 2 psykers for that exact reason. But there's so many armies out there that have got good denies, it didn't actually feel worth building for anymore.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you've now beaten 2 close combat armies. Surely you couldn't have 3 in a row.
Well, I did and I didn't. I'm playing now on table 1, which is always a bad place to be. And I was playing Clement with his Space Wolves. I'd never played Clement before, but I have seen him at a lot of events.
Yeah,
always seems to be playing Space Wolves. And we had a really good time, actually. He's a really funny guy. I'd not sort of played him before. His list was classic Space Wolves as he runs them, which is sort of lots of Vanguard vets. And then he always seems to run the Long Fangs in the drop pod. Mm-hmm. And he was running some Eradicates. Basically, he had lots and lots of Melter Death. And then lots and lots of close combat. So he was actually running Wolfen as well, which is quite interesting, which was also very funny because we had a moment where it was, all right, you fight on death and I fight on death, which was quite we had to sort of fight on death minigame in the middle. This game taught me a lot about where the army doesn't do well. And actually, I think it shows the other results are quite flattering to me because I absolutely get battered in this game. He brings down those melters and he brings down those grav in there as well. And he basically eliminates all of the chosen in one go. And then I can't quite get to him. And then he basically eliminates all the possessed in the next go. I do roll it. It was kind of a joke at the time. I must have rolled 25 ups and I must have made 1. Like it was just that time.
And if that spikes at the wrong moment, it can be
game-changing. Because if I get 1 turn out of those possessed where they can... sort of touch or at least kill one of those squads. It's a really different game. It's such a bloody game. In the end, I've got Chaos. What have I got left? A Chaos Spawn. I think that's it. And he's got the drop pod and a character. And so it's so bloody. He just really does outscore me quite well. And he played it better than I did, to be honest. We spoke about it afterwards, and he's firmly of the belief that, you know, to do really well, you need at least one or two good rounds of high quality shooting. That proved to be true for him. I don't think there's an equivalent unit like that in the Chaos Bogeyman's book. And I think that Bile wouldn't necessarily be better for doing that. But I definitely think I could have played it better. I was probably too reserved in this game, actually. All the things I've learned, for some reason, I was intimidated by.
I bet it can happen.
It was that, the Wolfen, I think. He's like, okay, well, he's now doing the thing that I want to do. He's doing it just as well as I am. We all died.
Mm. How many Wolfen did he have?
Two big squads.
Okay. Yeah, and you don't want
so
to.
So I was trading my five men possessed into them, the smallest units that I could. And then I thought about that. Leaves my 10 man with the rune, which is my sort of wound, to then go and take on the bigger stuff, thinking that 10 man would be enough to still get there and do the work. And they just melted. Mm-hmm. They just absolutely, I think they survived one round of shooting. Well, they didn't survive one round of shooting. So that's 30 wounds with a five up inbound and minus one to wound. And they just got absolutely obliterated.
Yeah, that's crazy. So you have now been defeated.
I have been defeated. The dream is over.
The dream is over. So we then move on to Sunday. Two games to go. What was
I was like, you know what? I don't want to. I've now realised my list very, very good into close combat. What I'm not good at is being shot, and by extension, taking any damage outside of the combat phase. So they get Paul Bridges, Leviathan Tyranids, which are very, very good at doing damage in the... well, they can do mortal wounds in the movement phase with the Harpies, which he had one of. They can do a lot of psychic death. He had two squads of Zone Thropes and a Neurothropes. He had like five smites in the list, powerful smites. And lots of shooting. And he had the massive super... gun on the Hive Tyrant that does flat five damage. He had he had two big warrior blobs kitted out with guns. He had the Harpy kitted out with guns. And I thought, okay, this is going to be really, really tough. Really tough. Mm. As it happened, it was tough. And we were playing, and I always get the name of the maps wrong, but sort of the furthest away from each other, that deployment. And we had good terrain for this one. And he went first, which I actually did want. I was able to hide quite well. I generally always wanted to go second if I could. And he flies his harpy across to me and he kills a load of my cultists or whatever. And then not much else happens. And I'm like, well, guess I try and deal with the harpies. I've got my demon prince right here. I can send Golax into him. And then what happens is that I've also got my 10 chosen there. And then we're chatting for a little bit. And I'm like, I'm just going to shoot my melter guns at this harpy. And then he ums and ahs a little bit and can't decide whether or not to transhuman it. He's already given it the invuln. He decides eventually, after some armor, that he doesn't want to. He started on zero CP, as did I in all my games. And so he doesn't. He's got one at this point, decides not to use it for some other reason that I can't remember. Then all three of the melt shots hit. All three of the melt shots wound. All three of them are failed saves. I do 17 damage because I'm all in melter range. So absolutely obliterate this harpy turn one. but whilst it wasn't sort of the most important thing in the world, what it did do was sort of remove that really powerful tool that was actually making me play differently, because I've got such useful characters that I can't afford to sort of get them sniped by a harpy. He brings his warrior blobs out. All I'm looking at is, okay, well, which one's he going to buff? And trying to stage in a way that I can go either way with it afterwards. So he literally splits down two channels and buffs one of them. I go for the other. I just put in my five possessed, and then I think I eventually put in my Master of Executions there as well. He brings over his flying Hive Tyrant there. And this was an interesting piece, and I'd like to get your input on this. So he brings, he's got maybe five warriors left on an objective. I've got five or eight possessed. I think I've two squads of five on that side. Into them, and I've killed a number of them at this point, and I'm going to get to strike again. his Hive Tyrant comes and charges those possessed now. I like the flying Hive Tyrant with the Reaper of Obliteracts, which is relevant for later. Yeah. And I'm like, well, I've got my executioner here. I can heroically intervene here. And I can just try and womp him. I'm thinking the mass, I've got seven attacks, I'm hitting on twos, I'm rerolling everything. Six is tipped to two mortal wounds. So I'm like, okay, well, I'm not going to kill him, but if I can take some of the attacks away from the possessed, I will still get to fight no matter what. And if I can do a good number of mortal wounds, then in my turn then, I'll actually be able to get rid of him what happens. So that's what I do. I intervene, knowing that in my turn I could have just charged him and fought anyway, but I wanted to sort of, I don't know, I don't know if it...
It gives you, it's all about tempo, exactly. Isn't it? And it gives you an extra turn. Like the game is so much about tempo.
I need to get rid of it quicker.
Rather than,
What happens is I do intervene. He does kill my Master of Execution. I'm like, great, I'll fight anyway. I end up doing 12 damage to the Flying Hive Tyrant, either through the Possessed or through the Master of Execution, which doesn't kill it, but leaves it on two wounds. Then in my turn, I get incredibly lucky and I smite it to death with one smite.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I really want to do, because then that's another really powerful unit that's gone. And at that point, all that side is basically killed. He's got two warriors left. I've got nothing on that side, but I don't care anymore. And on the other side, I've got all of my 10 chosen. I've got 10 possessed. I've got both Disco Lords. And they just absolutely rinse through the other warriors on the other side, which are now not buffed anymore because he's lost some powers. And I'm just racking up no prisoners points and just sort of plowing through him. Probably the moment, I think. It was that brave decision to try and take on the Flying Hive Tyrant that felt like it was the moment for me.
Fortune favours the brave.
And just possessed being too damaged, they're like warriors. And them being AP2 and 2 damage means the warriors barely get safe. Chosen being AP3, 1 damage, mean they're really good into stuff that's got inbound saves. So where he's got his own tropes, you know, it's just so, so many attacks. And by that point, I'm exploding everywhere. So it was a really, really close game. He played it well. He clearly knows his army very well.
He's been playing them a long time.
He has. And he was a lovely guy, actually. It's probably one of my favourite games over both weekends because it was so hard. Like it was a 7-point game in the end. And it was just super, super tough to sort of, it felt like a chess match.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's like it's a puzzle, isn't it, you're trying to solve, rather than any other games. I guess it was just like, well, I guess I'm just going to
write. Yeah, exactly. This one was not like that.
Quickly enough. Yeah. Which is what I like about the Harlequins at the moment, is that it is that you're trying to stagger it. And like that thing where I was trying to like screen him out, it was like a proper moving the pieces into position. Yeah. So it's always a lot more satisfying as games, I think. And you've done really well to beat Leviathan.
Yeah, the game, I was like, oh, if I can put a good showing into this, I'll be really happy. And actually, there was one other thing that I was really pleased with, which was that he had put his own tropes on some terrains to see through so he could smite my warp talons. They killed a number of them for that. But that meant I could charge him with my rhino through the wall, which meant he had to spend two turns smiting a rhino.
Smiting a rhino.
Which I was very, very happy about. So, yeah, I like that. That was a nice little play.
Cheeky little play. Excellent. So you're now 3-1. You don't want that nonsense 3-2, which is what for chumps.
I want the 4-1. I want the big 4-1.
You want to hunt that podium place. So what did you have in your final game?
I had a repeat of the previous week. I had Drakari for my final game. And long story short, it's very similar to the other game. similar kind of list, lots of boats, incubi. More grotesques in this. Well, I don't think Paulie had any, but Mikey, who I was playing, a lovely guy, very, very funny, had a lot of laughs in the game. He got my best favourite opponent vote, actually, for virtue of calling me a ball bag in the game. And I thought that was really funny. So he got...
It's high quality.
Yeah, I thought that was really funny. So he was a really good opponent. It was a classic case. He ran out of stuff. And by the end of the game, those Discordants were just running around, picking off sort of 2-3 man units or light vehicles, and they just ripped through a raider like you would believe. So, yeah, it was 87-60. So more comfortable than your sort of final game when you're going 4-1 often is.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
That's not to say that Mikey didn't play well. It's just the same thing. It's just such an anvil if you can't shift it. And at the same time, it, serves as a hammer if you come near it. So
yeah,
I really enjoyed playing the Biome. It's probably the simplest army I've played competitively. Once you figure out that win condition, there are some games. If I went into Shooty Tau with some of the terrain, I mean, you saw it a little bit in the Space Wars game. Some good shooting, it folds big, but it does pose that question: can you deal with it quickly enough? And if not, it eats your face.
Yeah.
So yeah, 4-1 in the end. I was really pleased within that group.
And where did you finish?
I finished fifth. The event was won, I can't remember the guy's name, but by the Dark Angels Landspeeder list.
Jack
won it, and I think Ben Jones came second.
Yeah, they were undefeated.
Clement, who was my third round opponent, came third. Stuart McIntyre, friend of the channel, came fourth with his Terminus Est, which looked absolutely backbreaking to play, but incredibly intimidating to play against. And then last but not least, me in fifth. So
there we go. How many players?
40.
40, fifth of 40 is a pretty good show.
I think it's probably, in terms of like my ITC score, probably my best event.
Yeah. Oh, congratulations.
Thanks. Yeah, so two weekends. Nothing now for a while, so that'll be nice.
Yeah, I was going to say our next event is LGT, really.
Yeah.
Kind of no tournament reports for then. We'll probably try and get out another podcast.
Yeah, a more general one, back to sort of the normal.
Just a general one.
Pick up on what's hot.
Yeah, we've done preparing for a tournament video.
We have. Recovering from a tournament would be the next one.
Yeah. But in terms of the channel, maybe we'll try and get a bite-sized bat rep out or something. Yeah.
So I'm really keen to get the demons on the channel now.
Yeah, so we definitely need to get the demons. Because you have got Scarbrand right there.
Yeah, he's
there.
Ready to go. He's not quite ready to go, but he will be soon.
Yeah. I've started writing scripts for a little series about playing the primary, where it will just go mission by mission, where just a really basic way of working out what your score will be for each mission, because I think that's really useful to know. It's like literally 3-4 minute videos for each mission where you can just go, well, I know this, this, and this, and I'll score this as long as I just do the basics. And I think just having that on like a sheet or whatever, just to know for each mission.
Particularly for newer players, that sort of prescriptive guide is really helpful. So Jack and I were talking
about it. I was speaking to JB East about it on the first mission. I was like, you know, if you just sit on your two objectives, that scores you 8 a turn. Death Guard are going to run down the middle. You just need to sit on your two objectives and you'll score 32 points. The mission secondary was, I think it was Corrupted Ground, so holding No Man's Land. So that was, you just hold your corner one, which you're getting your 8 on, that'll get you your 2 points. You're defending your shrine there. You're going to score 42 points on your primary without doing anything. Just do that. And he's like, yeah.
I know where this
literally
is going.
Literally 10 minutes into the game, we get a WhatsApp message. I may have charged everything straight into the middle, but it looked really cool. Mm-hmm. I just like, oh my gosh.
I respect that. Well done, Jamie East.
Yeah. Listen. So that's that. And then also at the time of recording, tomorrow the kit is due.
Oh, I'm very excited about that. You're going to put up a little video modelling it.
Yeah, I'll do a little Facebook live, although that will already be out by the time.
Yes, that's true. Podcast. Enjoy going back in time to see this, viewers.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I think that's all.
That's it, I think.
That's it.
Well done, rest well, and then building Scarbrand. That's next.
Oh, the dream. All right, well, thank you very much for joining us. I'm sure, well, hopefully Thomas will be back soon so you can have his dulcet tones. And thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks, everybody.
Take care. Bye.